Every day, Bill Frank...
We're going to be doing one thing and one thing only.
...talks with the best guests in America about business.
You mean business?
Monkey business?
Are you ready to get down to business?
All right! Everybody's here and that means we can get down to business.
Entertainment.
Entertainment.
The entertainment capital of the world.
What kind of entertainment?
It's a storm of entertainment that brings down the house.
Sports.
Game on.
A grueling test of strength, speed, and stamina.
Wow, just like in the pros.
And the local community.
The rage in local radio.
Find out what's going on locally.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time now for the Bill Frank Radio Show on News Talk 1520 KVTA. Now, here's your host.
Bill Frank.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to the Bill Frank Radio Show on KVTA News Talk 1520. You can also hear me streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. I'm bringing fresh perspectives to Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work here in Ventura and Santa Barbara. The Bill Frank Show is smart radio with sharp questions aimed at intelligent guests. It's talk radio done right for the 21st century. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is business and politics. As we get closer to the election, these two subjects dominate the conversation. Each of my guests will discuss either business or politics or both. My next guest is an educator and an environmentalist. She'll explain how educators can cultivate emotional, social, and ecological intelligence from her latest book, Ecoliterate. Lisa Bennett is the communications director at the Center for Ecoliteracy. She is also a former fellow at the Harvard Center on the Press and Politics and Public Policy. She is also a co-author of the book, Ecoliterate, How Educators Are Cultivating Emotional, Social, and Ecological Intelligence. Lisa is a longtime writer. She's contributed to books including The Compassionate Instinct and Smart by Nature. Her articles have appeared in the Christian Science Monitor, The Chronicle of Higher Education, Education Week, the Harvard Review, and the New York Times. She also blogs at the Huffington Post. Joining us from Northern California. Hi, Lisa. How are you today?
Good morning, Bill. I'm wonderful. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you for being our guest and being a thought leader in this particular area. It's a fascinating subject in how we deal with our children. And right now, you know, graduating school children, we require them to be literate. We require them to be numerate. But now you're proposing eco-literate. So what is eco-literacy, and how does eco-literacy relate to emotional and social intelligence? Draw the connections for us.
That's a great question. We are indeed advocating that young people be eco-literate in these times, and what that means, very simply, is just developing an understanding and a caring for where we fit in the larger natural environment. What's the connection between us as human beings and the oceans and the atmosphere and the entire natural world? And the new book that speaks about that reflects it through 8 stories, basically, of people around the country who are doing this in very creative ways. They're taking on some of the biggest ecological challenges of our day related to food and energy and water, and they're really making a difference in terms of educating people and inspiring them to act. And to your second point about how does this relate to emotional and social intelligence, you may remember about 7 years ago the psychologist Daniel Goleman came out with the book Emotional Intelligence.
Yes.
Yeah, big bestseller, and it really hooked a lot of people because the basic premise was, it's not just IQ that allows people to be successful in life. There's something else at play, and what often makes a critical difference is what somebody's emotional and social intelligence is. What's their ability to be aware of their own emotions and manage their own emotions, and their ability to have good, social relationships with others. It makes a difference in one's ability to be effective in whatever one's challenge. Well, Daniel Goleman teamed up with us on this book so that we could relate emotional, social, and ecological intelligence together. Now, you can look at that in 2 ways. One is, each one's really an extension of the other. You're talking about awareness of yourself, awareness of relationships to other humans, awareness of the natural world, but also connecting the emotional and social intelligence to ecological intelligence allows us to be more effective in educating and inspiring people to take some of the action that we know is necessary for sustainable living.
My guest is Lisa Bennett. We're talking about her new book. She's a co-author of Eco-Literate. So, Lisa, there are five key practices of eco-literacy, and I'm just going to list them off. I want to talk about each one in depth, though. Developing empathy for all forms of life, embracing sustainability as a community practice, making the invisible visible, anticipating the unintended consequences, and understanding how nature sustains life. So let's dive into those, because some of those are very intriguing, and I'm going to start with making the invisible visible. What do you mean by that?
You know, one of the stories in the book is about what's happening in Appalachia around mountaintop mining, and this relates very much to making the invisible visible. I happened to be there and met some of the people who were attempting to understand what's going on with mountaintop coal mining. And there are, for instance, you know, there's an educator who took his students from South Carolina to Kentucky in order to understand what the impact of mountaintop mining was. And here's where that's, you know, really, really relevant to making the invisible visible. Most people, even those of us who rely on coal for our energy, don't really have a sense of what that means. We don't see what's at the other end of our light switch. We don't see, you know, the mountains that are being destroyed, or we don't see those streams that are being polluted. And so making the invisible visible means taking the actions that allow us to see what those connections are. So in the case of this educator, for instance, he took his kids from, you know, a rather privileged place in South Carolina where they really didn't have any sense of what mountaintop mining was doing, even though they depended upon it. And he took them there to see it so that it made the invisible visible for them.
All right, that makes some sense. My guest is Lisa Bennett. Lisa, and one that just tickled me is anticipating the unintended consequences. Now, unintended consequences are, by nature, by definition, unintended. So how does one anticipate unintended consequences?
Well, that's a tough one. You know, one of the ways that we attempt to encourage people to educate with that in mind is through systems thinking that allow people to look at the larger picture. And, you know, very in our culture, we tend to be more narrow than that. We don't tend to look at all the relationships among things. So systems thinking is just a philosophical framework that we embed in everything that we do, and that is a way that just basically nurtures a sense of, let's look at what other results might come of this action that we're not now anticipating.
But how do you train particularly a young mind to think about things that really they can't think about? That's the challenge that I have with this.
Well, it depends. I mean, you have to break it. You certainly have to make it age appropriate, and you have to, you know, relate it to wherever the kid is at. And so one very, very simple way that a lot of educators do this is through getting kids involved in gardening, which sounds very simple, but it is a great opportunity to get them engaged in seeing what are all the different connections that happen when you grow something. What does it depend upon? What is it influenced by? What are the networks of relationships among all the living things in the soil there?
All right. My guest is Lisa Bennett. She's co-author of the book Eco-Literate, How Educators Are Cultivating Emotional, Social, and Ecological Intelligence. So, Lisa, one of the challenges, you live in California, same as I do. California public schools serve the country's largest student population, and it's very, very diverse, and we face unbelievable challenges with that diversity. California's per pupil expenditure lags behind the national average, and the gap grows if you consider teacher costs, labor costs in that as well. California's high labor costs and modest per-pupil expenditures means that high school districts have low staff-to-pupil ratios compared to the country as a whole. California, as you well know, ranks 47th in the percentage of public high school 8th graders proficient in mathematics. So in face of all of these daunting realities, should a responsible school system focus on eco-literacy or maybe boosting math and reading skills instead?
Bill, it's a great question, and I have to say I don't think it's an either-or situation. The great thing, you know, there are a number of great things that, that we have found in doing the work on this book. And one of them is that this kind of education is not only good for the environment. If it was good for the environment, you know, alone, we would be talking about something completely different. This is education that is good for education. It's rooted in social and emotional learning, and we know that social and emotional learning leads to significant increases in academic achievement. There was a meta-analysis that came out just last year. It looked at more than 200 social and emotional learning programs nationwide, and it showed that on average, those programs would lead to an 11% increase in academic achievement among young people. So bringing in an ecological worldview into education that's rooted in social and emotional learning is good for education.
All right.
Also, if I can add one more.
Sure, by all means.
We also have met educators in every discipline that you can think of who find ways to bring this into teaching about math, and teaching reading, and teaching history, and teaching art. You know, it is a perspective. It's just, you know, what's your worldview? Are you conscious of the connection between, you know, all the connections among the natural environment of which we are a part? And if so, that can be made a part of every discipline. So it's not instead of anything else.
All right, I'm going to push this a step farther, though, if I can with you, Lisa, just a moment, because 11% academic achievement increase, that's nothing to sneeze at. But weighing alternatives, does it make more sense to teach basic financial literacy before teaching eco-literacy? Because less than 75% of Americans have any financial education as adults. Shouldn't we beginning maybe looking at financial literacy and instead of ecological literacy? What do you say to that?
You know, I think that we are living in times that present many, many great needs and challenges, and I'm very sensitive to that, and I don't think that one is ever on a strong ground to say, you know, this is more important than that when you're talking about many of the issues that we face today, and certainly people are very concerned about the economy right now for good reason. So I don't want to say this is more important than. I want to say this is important, and that, you know, this is a way to positively engage in very real ecological challenges that also has financial implications, and it is a way to advance academic achievement. As I said, it's a way to help protect the environment. It's a way to build resiliency and optimism among young people. And, you know, the more you do all of that, the more people can take on. And that's why I'm positive about this.
All right, my guest is Lisa Bennett. She's co-author of the book Eco-Literate. So, Lisa, what are the role of the parents in teaching eco-literacy? I mean, is teaching eco-literacy something that can only be done inside a classroom? And more importantly, is eco-literacy undone if the parents are not supportive or uninvolved at home?
That too is interesting. You ask great questions. The you know, the role of parents in teaching eco-literacy, first of all, it is always a dynamic, as we know, those of us who are parents, and I am a parent, you know, it's a dynamic between our relationship with the children and the school's relationship with our children. So it can be that a parent can nurture this kind of a sensibility and understanding among their children and help this along. It can also be that it doesn't resonate for a parent at all. Whether that can be undone for parents, if that can be undone if parents aren't supportive, I don't know. You know, I guess in some cases that might be true. What we see more often than not, though, is that when kids are exposed to this, especially now, because, you know, let's face it, kids are pretty aware of a lot of the ecological challenges that are out there right now. And once they're made aware of something like this, very often what we see is that they get this passion going that comes home and becomes an influence on the parents. And, you know, and then it becomes more of a positive dynamic on both sides.
My guest is Lisa Bennett, co-author of the book Eco-Literate, How Educators Are Cultivating Emotional, Social, and Ecological Intelligence. Lisa, what do you want readers to take away from reading your book, Eco-Literate?
I thought a lot about that after, you know, having the great opportunity to meet some of the terrific leaders and educators and young people that we met in the course of working on this book. And what I would like them to take away is a sense through these stories of just how inspiring and rewarding it genuinely is to engage in these challenges. You know, it's positive education, there's no question about that, but because this is raising ecological issues, you know, a lot of people get scared of them and they shy away from them. And what the stories have demonstrated is that when people do get engaged and take some kind of action at whatever scale is possible, it really, really leads to positive results for them. You know, I had a great opportunity to meet the writer and farmer, Wendell Berry, and he was engaged in... He was about to meet the governor of Kentucky and talk to him to try to get him to be less supportive of mountaintop mining. And I thought that was, I guess, a long shot because the governor clearly was very supportive of mountaintop mining. And I asked Wendell Berry, I said, "Do you think that you're really going to be successful with this?" And he said, "I don't know if I'm going to be successful. I don't think that's the right question. I think the right question is this the right thing to do? And I know it's the right thing to do."
Oh, that is a great story. My guest has been Lisa Bennett. Lisa, if people are intrigued by what you have to say, they want to learn more about you, learn more about the book, where would you direct them to go?
To our website first, which is ecoliteracy.org, ecoliteracy.org. And we have some excerpts, in fact, of the book Eco-Literate on the website. We have many, many other publications and resources there as well.
Oh, that is great. Lisa, thank you so much for being my guest here on The Bill Frank Show. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thank you so much, Bill.